Hello once again, everybody, and thank you for joining me here on this Monday, December 23rd edition of Bang the Book Radio. My name is Adam Burke, your host for the next hour or so. We're going to go over all kinds of things in the world of sports from a betting focus. Happy to have you with us here on this holiday week. Merry Christmas, Happy Hanukkah, Merry Kwanzaa, Happy Festivus, whatever it is that you celebrate. Hope you're having a good time here this week with a little bit of time off, some time with the friends and family. That's what we'll be doing here this week on Bang the Book Radio. No shows on Tuesday or Wednesday here for the holidays. But we do have a show today that is the full program with professional handicapper Kyle Hunter from huntersportspicks.com. Also his new venture, bettersportspicks.com. We'll do our college football first look for this week of the bowl season. Also take a look around college basketball. Very, very light slate of games on the hardwood here this week. So we'll be taking a look at some regression candidates, both positive and negative. Some strength of schedule things and some fade and follow teams as conference play rolls around here after the new year. Over at bangthebook.com, we are your one-stop shop for sports betting news and information. All the bowl games previewed over there at the website. Make sure you check all that out. We'll have continued coverage of the NFL for week 17 and on into the playoffs as well. Daily NHL, NBA, college basketball, my situational betting articles posted over there. Again, very light week in college hoops, but we still have some spots to consider. No games in the NHL Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, but a very busy weekend that you want to read up about. Then also in the NBA, only off on Tuesday, got the five games on Wednesday for Christmas Day. So plenty of stuff going on still over at the website. Finally, as you know, this and every edition of Bang the Book Radio presented by our friends over at DSI Sportsbook. BTB and the number 200 is that promo code. 100% deposit match bonus for the Sportsbook. 100% deposit match bonus for the live casino at BetDSI. It's only a game. Until you bet it. One guest with me here for the full show on this December 23rd edition of Bang the Book Radio. That is professional handicapper Kyle Hunter from huntersportspicks.com and also bettersportspicks.com. Kyle, how's it going today, man?
Doing all right, man. How are you today?
Doing very well, buddy. Appreciate your time as always here. I know the kids are home. The wife's got the break from her teaching job. So I know things very, very busy for you. Certainly appreciate your time. As always, and I guess we'll go ahead and start by saying Merry Christmas, man. I hope you enjoy the holiday.
Merry Christmas to you as well. Merry Christmas and happy holidays to all the listeners as well. I hope everybody has a great week. I know I'm going to take just a little bit of time off this week, at least compared to my normal schedule. Still pretty busy around here, as you know, but looking forward here to this holiday season, certainly.
Yeah, most definitely. We got one bowl game here today on December 23rd. It is the Gasparilla Bowl. By the time we get the show out, by the time everybody listens to it, this one will have already started probably. If not, if you listen right away, I did take Marshall plus 17.5 in this one. Line's gone down to as low as 15 now. A little bit of weather, a possibility here in this game. So the total getting hammered down in that one. But we'll start with the Holiday Bowl here, BYU and Hawaii. And a good holiday tradition here, a little Mele Kalikimaka tradition of sweating a Hawaii bowl game on Christmas Eve. BYU 2-point favorite here in this game. Of course, obviously this game in Honolulu, so Hawaii staying at home. Total of 64 in this one. What do you think about this one, Kyle?
Well, I think this was an interesting game in that, you know, you wonder, you know, I always wonder, and we've talked about this many times before, if the team who goes to Hawaii is excited to be there for the game or they're just excited to be in Hawaii. You know, BYU is a better team than Hawaii. I tend to want to bet BYU in this spot. I am concerned just that, you know, I wonder, if BYU is a business trip or not. BYU's offense should be able to move the ball here. You know, Hawaii's defense, 107th yards per play allowed, stopping the run 5.57 yards per carry allowed. I think BYU can move the ball pretty effectively here, even if they're not terribly invested. I think the question mark here is, will BYU's defense stop Hawaii? And Hawaii's had some major turnover problems. We've talked about this through the course of the season. They're minus 14 in turnover margin. Really, it's pretty rare to see a team with as good a record with that many turnovers like they have so far this year. The other thing I would point out is Hawaii's special teams have been a real problem this year. They're 110th in special teams, according to S&P. BYU, not great either, 92nd. So we have a little bit of a edge to BYU, but neither team very good in that area. BYU's had some trouble protecting the quarterback this year. They're minus 16 in sack margin. They are plus 4 turnover margin. I think BYU is the better team. If you look at yards per play margin, they have the better yards per play margin, even though their record's not as good. BYU only 4-8 ATS. You know, they've had all the different quarterbacks, and I think really, you know, BYU has three pretty good quarterbacks, to be honest with you. So solid depth there. Not a great running game compared to some seasons for BYU, but they have more ability to throw the ball around. BYU has really struggled in the red zone this year, and that's been a consistent problem for them. They've only scored 71.7% of the times they've gotten inside the 20-yard line. So they've had tons of red zone turnovers. They've had to settle for field goals too many times. BYU is going to have to score when they get in the red zone. I think Hawaii will score enough here to at least put pressure on them. My leans here would be BYU and the over, and I'm curious to see what you think of this one.
Yeah, I like BYU a little bit in this one. This is actually one of the bigger overlays I have in the bowl season. I think I have BYU minus 5.5 or so, and that's even with, you know, obviously giving Hawaii a little bit of an advantage for being at home here in this game. So I do like BYU from a numbers standpoint. I like BYU a little bit just from a spot standpoint here. And also, to me, BYU tied for 10th in the country in interceptions with 15. As we know, Hawaii throws a lot of interceptions, so there could be some extra possessions for BYU here in this one. Couple of other angles to consider here. Head coach Kalani Sitake, he spent a decent amount of his childhood in Hawaii, so something of kind of a homecoming for him. The state of Hawaii has a really strong LDS population as well. So maybe some BYU fans in the crowd for this one, even though it is obviously being played in Honolulu. I kind of like BYU a little bit here. I haven't had much success in the bowl season so far. SMU totally no-showed. Central Michigan, I don't know what the hell that was. I wound up taking Charlotte once that number got to 7, and they were never competitive in that game either. So not really seeing these bowls all that well here at the outset, but I do like BYU in this one. Again, I think they get some extra possessions, and I think they can take advantage of them. As you mentioned, it's a pretty weak Hawaii defense. So BYU minus 2 for me. May wait on this one since the line does appear to be coming down a little bit. No strong opinion on the total, but I'll probably wind up playing BYU. It won't be large. It'll be something to, you know, kind of follow on Christmas Eve for me.
Yeah, and I did want to note that I already had one question about the weather in this game. 10 miles per hour wind, but, you know, it's always kind of windy in Hawaii. That's certainly not anything out of the ordinary here. So I don't think that, you know, I would be scared away from taking it over or to think that, you know, the wind is going to be a major problem based on that forecast here in this one. So I'll lean to BYU, a slight lean to the over as well. I think that's a good point about Kalani Sitake coming back to Hawaii. You would think that BYU would care about this game. And if they do, they're the better team. And like you said, Hawaii's had a lot of turnover problems. Specifically, Cole McDonald's really had trouble with that. So BYU is my lean in this one. This game may come down. Like you said, we see a couple 1.5 showing with extra juice. You know, not that this is particularly an important number, but, you know, you may be able to do a little bit better than what's there right now.
Yeah, maybe even just instead of laying the 2, because, I mean, things could get a little bit weird here. You just take kind of a depressed money line or something like that on BYU. You know, that may be a little bit of an option there. No college football bowl games on Wednesday. Wednesday is all about the NBA and the 5-pack of games over there. Thursday, we go to the Independence Bowl, the walk-ons Independence Bowl game, 223-224, Miami and Louisiana Tech. And you mentioned kind of wondering if BYU wants to be there to play football or just be there because it's Hawaii. A lot of questions here about Miami and how invested they're going to be in this game against Louisiana Tech.
Yeah, so I thought about this game a lot. This is one where I really spent a lot of time on it already, so I'll kind of walk through my thought process on this one. This one opened 7 or 7.5 at a few places. I strongly considered taking Louisiana Tech here. You know, Miami has played so bad in bowl games the last few years. I mean, they have just totally laid eggs, not just lost. I mean, the way they've lost, they've been really, really bad. Obviously, you have a different coaching staff. Louisiana Tech so close to home, very big advantage for them. My concern is that, you know, Louisiana Tech is certainly far less talented. They don't have near as many 5-star recruits, 4-star recruits, anything like that, like Miami has. Louisiana Tech should want to win this game. If Miami is invested for this game, this is not a very big price. And I knew this line was going to go down. I ended up passing and thinking I'd wait and see later. And obviously, you know, now it's 6 or 6.5. I do kind of wonder, you know, first we see the line, what it is. you see 68% of the bets are on Louisiana Tech and 83% of the money. So would suggest that there's some sharp money here on Louisiana Tech. There's also going to be some public money on Louisiana Tech because the public knows, too, that Miami has not done well in these bowl games. So, you know, as I think about it, I just don't have a ton of confidence in Louisiana Tech at under a touchdown because I feel like there's a wide range of what could happen in this game. You know, it wouldn't stun me if Miami wins by 20 points because they actually showed up ready to play. It also wouldn't stun me if Louisiana Tech just wins outright and wins by a decent amount. I know that this sounds kind of contrary to what I would usually say, but I don't mind taking Louisiana Tech on the money line here for a small play. I think you can get about plus 200 some places. I think that that's at least worth some small amount of money because, like I said, I think there's a wide range of what could happen in this game. So if you're getting a big plus price, I think that makes some sense. I will say that Skip Holtz has had his team ready in bowl games in the past, 7-3 ATS in the last 10. Miami has not been ready. I would think that Miami would struggle to be up for this game. So I still lean to Louisiana Tech. I just have that concern that there is a pretty big talent disadvantage. So that's why I'm a little bit less likely to want to take 6 or 6.5. And I tend to kind of like the money line here.
Yeah, and I mean, this is the thing, you know, from a power rating standpoint, and again, power ratings, you know, kind of looking at the market over the course of the season, sort of evaluating the talent of these teams, I actually have this line at 10, and yeah. I'm not going to play it because of everything you just mentioned. I don't know if Miami wants to be there. I don't know if Miami is going to be prepared. I know Louisiana Tech, going through the suspensions late in the year that, you know, quite possibly kept them out of the Conference USA Championship game. This is a second opportunity for them, and it's a chance to knock off a Power 5 team. And as you mentioned, Skip Holtz's team is generally very prepared for the bowls. So Miami is the better team. If this was a regular season game, I'd probably play Miami. But because it's a bowl game and you have to treat it differently and look more at the motivational angles of these teams, even though it is cheap, it's very hard for me to take Miami here. They're the better team. They played much better when Jaren Williams was at quarterback. And he's got some extra bowl prep here for this one, but I can't get myself to do it. Even if it goes to 5.5, I don't envision myself having the stones to take Miami.
No, I couldn't take Miami here either. And I agree. My power rating number here is 9. So it's not that I think that this is a good play on Louisiana Tech because of that. It's more of a, like I said, just a lot of question marks about this game. I think that, you know, you take a plus price, you have plus EV decision here with plus 200 or so on Louisiana Tech. Obviously, it's less likely that it'll win, you know, being plus 200. But, you know, those are the chances you take. I do think that Miami is a team that there's still quite a bit of questions about their future at this point. You know, is Diaz actually going to do a really good job with this team or not? I mean, they really had some poor performances during the season. And, you know, they didn't end the season particularly well. So I don't know what to make of Miami. Too big of an unknown for me. Like I said, obviously, if Miami shows up ready to play, is really fired up about this game, they could win easily. I'm not confident they'll do that, though. So on the total, I have no lean at all. I think this number's right on. Just Louisiana Tech's defense is better than the average defense in that league. But, you know, Miami is accustomed to playing against better defenses than that. And Louisiana Tech is not as good offensively as they were a few years ago where they were putting up video game numbers. So I think this total is right about spot on.
The other game here coming up on Thursday night is the Quick Lane Bowl in Detroit, game 225-226, Pitt and Eastern Michigan. I don't know if we've gotten any resistance on this number. We've just kind of reached a stopping point with it, with Pitt minus 11. There's a couple of 11.5s out there. Total on this one, 48.5 to 49. Most places out there, 49. And the Quick Lane Bowl, typically ACC versus Big Ten, but this time you get ACC versus the MAC. And so far, you know, the MAC's had fairly decent returns here. Nice wins for Kent State and Buffalo. Whatever the hell Central Michigan did down in New Mexico aside, you know, the MAC hasn't been as bad as it generally is in these bowl games. We'll see if that changes a little bit here in this one. Again, Pitt, an 11-point favorite, total of 49. What do you think here?
This is a tough game, a real tough game. I think that, you know, I don't want to bet Eastern Michigan. because Pitt is so much better defensively. The Pitt defense has been very, very good, better than I thought they would be. Pitt is fifth in the nation in yards per play allowed. Now, certainly, nobody would say that the ACC was a good conference, but, you know, certainly far better than the MAC, and Pitt's played a much tougher schedule than has Eastern Michigan. Pitt's minus eight in turnover margin this year, and that really hurt them quite a bit. Even with that, they're 7-5 ATS. 9-3 to the under has been Pitt. Eastern Michigan, a team that's been a good over team this year, 7-3-2 on the over. I tend to think that Pitt will score a decent amount of points here on Eastern Michigan, even though Pitt's offense looks pretty bad. They're 111th in yards per play. The question is, will Eastern Michigan score enough points here if you want an over? I lean to the over. If I had to take something, I'd take the over. I also lean to Pitt, but this is a lot of points to lay with Pitt. I mean, have they beaten anybody by that? I guess maybe, what did they beat Ohio by? I know that in general, Pitt has played a ton of close games this year. So, I mean, you're asking them to do something that they haven't beaten anybody by that basically all year. I think Pitt, to me, is a team that I'd be really scared to lay too many points with, but I'm not confident that Eastern Michigan can handle in the trenches in this game. I don't think that they can hold their own there. I lean to Pitt here in this one, but I wish this price was better. If it was 10, I'd be laying it with Pitt.
My line's 12.5 here. If I just look at, you know, a pure power rating standpoint, I thought about giving Eastern Michigan maybe a point or so for home field just because they're so close to Detroit, but I opted against that because I don't know how well represented they're actually going to be here in a bowl game the day after Christmas. So my number is 12.5 for this one. And one of the big reasons why Pitt fared so well from a yards per play standpoint on defense is that they were tied for third in the country with 49 sacks. They get after the quarterback. They did a very good job of doing that. Now, the question is, was Eastern Michigan the benefactor of some bad offenses in the MAC? Or is Mike Glass III just elusive enough to where they didn't give up a lot of sacks this year? They only allowed 21. Glass only took 12. The true freshman, Preston Hutchinson, took 8 of them. I think he only started 2 games or something like that. So Glass is able to evade the rush. He's kind of a dual threat type of guy. He's the most important player to this handicap. If he avoids getting sacked and can move the chains a little bit, Eastern Michigan can hang around, and I think the under is in play. If he can't and Pitt just dominates this game in the trenches, then Pitt's going to get extra possessions because Eastern Michigan's going to be punting on 4th and long all the time. They're going to get chances with that pretty bad offense that they have. So I think this is a difficult one. You know, I think it's tough because I also wonder how excited, how invested is Pitt to go to Detroit and play a MAC team in a bowl game? You know, last year they played in El Paso where at least it's something different, a change of scenery. The weather's going to be nicer. I know they're inside for this, but, you know, still, is Pitt excited to go and play a 6-6 MAC team in the MAC team's home state? Probably not. So I wonder about that a little bit here for Pitt, too. Something of a homecoming for Narduzzi coming back to Michigan. I'm sure there's quite a few Michigan natives on that Pitt roster from, you know, Narduzzi's pipeline. But I kind of like the under a little bit here in this game, under 49. I don't really know too much about the side, but I think Chris Creighton may be creative enough and Glass could be elusive enough to avoid that pass rush. But if he's under duress all game, this is a great live betting opportunity to take Pitt minus whatever the number is, because if they dominate this game early, they should dominate throughout.
Yeah, a couple stats here that stand out to me. First of all, Pitt has fumbled the ball 21 times this year, which is really pretty amazing. They lost 11 of those fumbles. Pitt, to me, the key to this offense has been that they really, really struggle when they get in the red zone. 36 trips into the red zone, 16 touchdowns, which, I mean, that's 44.4%. That's 126th best in the country out of 130. So they've really struggled there. They've had quite a few turnovers in the red zone as well. I do think here that I'm really concerned about Eastern Michigan's defense. I mean, they're 91st in the nation in yards per play allowed, and they played against the MAC. So Eastern Michigan defensively is a real problem to me. I think Pitt, if they're even caring at all, can score a decent amount of points in this game, though. I think that what you said there was a very fair point about the fact that, you know, is Pitt really excited to be going and playing a MAC team up here in Michigan in this bowl game? And it's, you know, right after Christmas, I think there are certainly fair questions to be asked there. So this is not a game I'm excited about.
One other quick thing here. Eastern Michigan, 112th ranked schedule in the country, Pitt 53rd. So, you know, this is a step up in class, to say the least, here for Eastern Michigan in this one. All right, so what we're going to try to do here, again, we have no shows Tuesday, Wednesday, so I want to hit all the weekday bowl games here, and if time permits, we can maybe talk a little bit about Saturday. But we start on Friday here, 227-228, the Military Bowl between North Carolina and Temple, 4.5 and 53 market-wide, with the Tar Heels a favorite here in Annapolis.
Yeah, I mean, if you can bet a Rod Carey coach team in a bowl game, you can do something that I can't. So, I mean, this is one where Rod Carey's teams have not just lost in bowl games. They have been absolutely blown out. I believe in his last five bowl games, they've lost by about 30 points on average. So, I mean, maybe he, at a different location, he has them more ready to play, but I want to see it first. You know, I'm certainly not going to bet on that. Mac Brown in general, I know he's gotten some grief, but, you know, I think this is a guy who does a pretty good job with extra time to prep. His teams have done pretty well in bowl season. And if you look at North Carolina's offense, a good freshman quarterback, a guy who I think is going to have a really nice career. 25th in yards per play on offense. They're especially good through the air. The thing that I would say is Temple's defense is certainly legitimately good. They've been very good against the pass. Temple's offense to me is a big question mark. You know, I don't think Temple's going to be able to do very much here. I have two leans in this game. My first is North Carolina because of Rod Carey and how he's done prepping teams. And the second is the under. I think that Temple wants this to be a lower scoring game. I don't think Temple can get into a really high scoring contest. I don't think Temple has enough weapons. North Carolina has played a few teams that are very good offensively. Temple doesn't have those kind of weapons. Temple's quarterback play is a real problem, and they're 97th in yards per carry. So I think Temple's offense really is a big question mark. Special teams, Temple does have the edge there, so they have that. They also have been very good when it comes to sack margin, plus 21. Temple's very aggressive on defense. This is a team that is going to take plenty of chances. I think North Carolina can make them pay for that. North Carolina has some deep threats. Howell can really throw a deep ball. I think North Carolina is the side I like in this one. North Carolina plus 0.83 yards per play, 29th best in the country. So they're 6-6, but they actually, you know, if you look at their underlying numbers, they're a little bit better team than that. And I would lay the 4.5 here if I was taking the side, and I would also look to the under.
I took North Carolina in this game -4. I have no idea why this line moved down. I don't know if this was a setup. I'm not exactly sure what this was. But as you mentioned, Rod Carey, terrible in bowl games. And North Carolina, I mean, this is a really good offensive team. And Temple, yeah, their yards per play stats look pretty good. They also played the 80th ranked schedule in the country. The two Power 5 teams they played, Maryland and Georgia Tech, were both terrible on offense. UCF, 614 yards against Temple. SMU, 655. Memphis had 492. They also turned the football over four times in that game. So when Temple stepped up and played good offenses, they got shredded. I think North Carolina can do the same thing to them here. Also, how about this stat? And I'm going to have some futures positions on North Carolina next year. I like Phil Longo. I like Jay Bateman. I love the coordinators. They're starting to maximize that talent a little bit. But how about this one? From David Hale of ESPN. Freshman quarterback Sam Howell, one of 11 Power 5 quarterbacks to post a 60% completion rate, throw for 35 touchdowns with 10 or fewer interceptions, throw for 3,300 yards, and have 8.5 yards per pass attempt through 12 games. The other guys that have done that, Joe Burrow, Kyler Murray, Dwayne Haskins, Will Greer, Mason Rudolph, Baker Mayfield, Patrick Mahomes, Marcus Mariota, Jameis Winston, and RG3. That's some pretty good company there for Sam Howell, and he's just a freshman. So I'm going to have North Carolina futures to win the Coastal next year. I'm going to have them maybe to win the ACC in hopes that they recruit really well and that they have some guys really step up and they're able to challenge Clemson a little bit. And I'm going to play their season win total over too. And I've got them here in this game. Like I said, -4. I like it at 4.5. I like it at 5. My line here is 6.5 on this game. So I was closer to the opener. It's North Carolina for me, one of my favorite plays of the bowl season. And hopefully this goes better than my favorite plays from this past Saturday.
I like North Carolina here, too, and I agree with what you said about next year, there being some value on them, especially to win the Coastal. You know, hopefully the hype train doesn't get too big on North Carolina, because you know how that can work sometimes. But I think North Carolina is a team that has some good young talent. Mac Brown's really done a good job there this year. And I know they lost several close games. Like I said, you know, you look at your yards per play margin, they've been better than that. Temple, to me, a big unknown. I think I know what we're going to get from North Carolina. Temple, I have no idea what we're going to get. I like North Carolina -4.5, and I lean to the under too.
All right, so we go to the Pinstripe Bowl here, 229-230 on Friday. Michigan State and Wake Forest, this one at Yankee Stadium in the Bronx. So obviously weather could end up being a factor here in this game. I'll take a look at the forecast as we're talking here. But so far, no move on the total. So maybe the forecast looks all right, at least as of now. Michigan State, 3.5-point favorite, total of 50. This one got as high as 4.5 and then came back down with some Wake Forest money a little bit later on in the process. So what do you think about this one?
Yeah, I mean, Michigan State's been so bad this year. I'm very cautious to bet on Michigan State here. I know Wake Forest has some injury problems, and I think that's probably part of the reason that this line is where it is. Jamie Newman's probable for this one. Zade Sherratt is out. Scotty Washington is listed as probable. You know, Michigan State without the linebacker as well, who was suspended. You know, to me, this is a big question mark on Michigan State. What do you think of Michigan State? I think I know what Wake Forest is. They're a team who plays hard, doesn't have elite talent. I think Newman's very good at quarterback. They don't have a bunch of elite talent at Wake Forest. Michigan State has more talent, but I don't know if Michigan State's excited to be in this game either. I mean, Michigan State was supposed to be better than this, and they were very fortunate to even get to this bowl game the way they played there at the end of the season. So I don't want to lay the points with Michigan State. I'm not particularly anxious to want to take points with Wake Forest. Over 4, I would be somewhat tempted to take Wake Forest. I guess I lean to the over a little bit in this one, and that scares me. I really don't want to play an over. So far, it looks like the weather forecast looks good there, but definitely one that you'll want to check as it gets closer. I think that Wake Forest's defense is so weak that Michigan State's offense will actually be able to move the ball. And Wake Forest plays at such a tempo that, you know, 50 points is a pretty low total. So my slight lean here will be the over, but I don't like this game very much.
I don't like this one much either. I mean, from a pure power rating standpoint, I got a little bit of value on Wake Forest. I've got this one -1.5 for Michigan State. So going through that key number of 3, you know, if it's 4, 4.5, something like that, maybe I take a small piece of Wake Forest. But what this game is going to tell me is how much Mark D'Antonio still gets through to that team in East Lansing. Yeah. Because this is a second chance. You know, you underachieved during the regular season. You did not play well. You did not get where you wanted to get. They underperformed expectations relative to their season win total. Do they use this as a wipe the slate clean kind of situation, or do they just sort of play out the string and play out the year? If it's the latter, I'm going to look to fade Michigan State next year, because I think maybe Mark D'Antonio, maybe he's not getting through to the players anymore. Maybe he's not adapting to what college football in 2019 actually is. Maybe he just doesn't have the offensive personnel to do that and doesn't have the speed on defense to, you know, sort of adapt to what's going on here. So if they look bad in this bowl game, you know, I don't know if I'll cash a Wake Forest ticket in that regard, but going into next year, it will kind of give me a starting point and an idea about Michigan State, and it will not be an optimistic look at the Spartans for next year.
I agree with that. You know, I think this one tells us more about the future than anything else. Like I said, and I think you're implying too, that this is a question mark about Michigan State. You know, we don't know what they are. We know that they've been disappointing this year. A lot of people had high hopes for them. I certainly thought they'd be better than they were. I don't know what kind of effort we get from them in this one, and that's why I'd rather not bet this game.
So we go to the Texas Bowl here, game 231-232, Oklahoma State, Texas A&M. 6.5, 7, the prevailing number out there, 54 the total for this one. We saw very early A&M money. We haven't seen any Oklahoma State buyback really to this point. Is this a game that you've got a strong take on?
I do like this one better than I like some of the others. I like Oklahoma State in this one. I think Mike Gundy's an underrated coach. He has been for quite a while. ATS-wise, his teams have made good money. Texas A&M is a good team. I'm not saying that, you know, Jimbo Fisher is a bad coach or that they're a bad team. Kellen Mond, though, has been inconsistent. You know, I think that Kellen Mond should be able to throw for quite a few yards here on Oklahoma State, but he also might throw a couple picks. You know, he's done quite a bit of that. Texas A&M's defense has not been quite as good as I thought they might be able to be this year. I think from what I've read, Spencer Sanders is probably going to play in this game. You can correct me if you've seen anything different, but I haven't bet these games yet, but I like Oklahoma State +7 here. That number might not be there for too long, so this is going to be one that I look at a little bit more here today. But I think Oklahoma State, a team that I would like to grab the 7 points with here. I think Texas A&M's been a bit overvalued here at the end of the season. Oklahoma State, a team with a lot of time to get ready. Gundy's done a good job in these spots. I like Mike Gundy's team as an underdog. To me, Oklahoma State played in a pretty good conference. Texas A&M clearly plays in a good conference. You get to 7 points. It's such a key number that I have to look toward Oklahoma State in this one. I think that Texas A&M is a good team, but not the elite team that some people thought they were going to be this season. And I know there's been a little bit of money come in here on Texas A&M thus far to get it from 6 to 6.5 or 7, probably partly because where this game is being played. But, you know, Oklahoma State's not a long ways away either. And I like Mike Gundy with time to prepare. To me, you know, this is one of those spots where Texas A&M, the name value of the team, the conference they play in, probably has overvalued them by a little bit.
Well, and you were pretty high on Oklahoma State coming into the season. You liked their, you know, their offensive coordinator move. You sort of thought that, you know, that was a team that would wind up having a fairly high ceiling, and they did wind up with a lot of injuries and stuff like that. You know, there was probably some speculation in the early line move that maybe Chuba Hubbard would sit out this game. You know, certainly wouldn't blame him for that. Spencer Sanders coming back. I know Spencer Sanders isn't great, but that dual threat improvisation type of style that you can use in a bowl game can be really beneficial because you can't game plan for that. You know, when things break down and a guy can go and make plays with his legs or, you know, scramble around and find somebody open, no amount of prep in the world is actually going to allow you to have success against that, you know, if the guy is making plays. So that's something that could help Oklahoma State here. I understand the A&M sentiment because you look at Texas A&M, they're 5 losses, Clemson, Auburn, Alabama, Georgia, LSU. If you're going to lose to 5 teams, those are probably the 5 teams to lose to. So I think that's kind of, you know, fueling this line move a little bit here too, in the sense that Oklahoma State is, you know, probably closer to a Mississippi State or a South Carolina than they are to those 5 elite teams. But at the same time, this is kind of middle ground for Texas A&M that we haven't seen. You know, they beat Texas State. They're no good. Lamar, FCS, struggling with Arkansas was a real bad look. At Ole Miss, Ole Miss wasn't great. Mississippi State wasn't a great team. UTSA, they're no good. South Carolina, I mean, they are okay, but they played a very difficult schedule themselves. I think it's kind of hard to evaluate A&M against a, you know, third-tier team like in Oklahoma State. So I guess line is a little bit high. My line is 7 on the game, though, so I guess maybe I shouldn't say that. But I kind of agree with your mindset there and kind of agree with Gundy being underappreciated in this spot.
Yeah, a couple things. I had Oklahoma State win total over, and even with some of those injuries, that one did cash. They went 8-3-1 ATS, so Oklahoma State did still do well. You compared Oklahoma State to Mississippi State, which might be a bit of a slight on Oklahoma State, to be honest. I think that, in general, I think Texas A&M, if you look at their defense, and I should have pointed this out earlier, so I'm glad you threw it back to me, Texas A&M is good in the secondary. Texas A&M is not good at stopping the run. They're 55th in the nation in stopping the run. Yards per carry, 4.01. They've also given up quite a few big gainers. Oklahoma State can run the football, and I think they'll be able to run the ball here. As I look at this game a little bit more, too, even though my number is only slightly higher than this, I think I like the over in this one because I would be surprised if Texas A&M can't throw the ball on Oklahoma State. They should be able to move the ball quite a bit in general. I think you know, this is a fairly low number for an Oklahoma State game, especially if Spencer Sanders is even close to 100%. Not that their backup Brown is bad, but Sanders really helps this offense quite a bit. I think Oklahoma State will be able to move the ball. I'd be surprised if Texas A&M can't too. So I think this total's a little bit too low the more I look at it. And I also think the fact that both of these teams have had more unders than overs so far this year is a good thing. And we've seen that, you know, if I look at the systems and trends and things like that, overs have done better with two teams that have been under teams throughout the course of the season, which certainly makes sense.
All right, so let's go west here. Let's go out to San Diego. We'll go to the Holiday Bowl between USC and Iowa. Pretty good bowl game here on December 27th, game 233-234. Iowa, 2-point favorite. Total on the rise a little bit, 52, kind of the prevailing number. Still some 51.5s with some overjuice out there as well. It's a good game, and I'll let you break it down first, but I will say this is one of my biggest power ratings overlays of the bowl season.
Well, I'm interested to see what you have to say about this one, too. But Clay Helton at USC, I think listeners probably know what I think about Clay Helton at this point. I don't really have anything against him as a person. He seems like a nice enough guy, but I'm really surprised that he kept this job. I really am. To me, Iowa is a team that will be better prepared for this game. USC has better talent than does Iowa. So what does that mean in a game like this? Well, you know, I think that Iowa on offense throws the ball a little bit more than most people think. You know, they throw the ball 48% of the time. They have a good quarterback, decent wide receivers. This is not an Iowa team that just runs the ball down your throat like they used to. They don't really have that great of an offensive line. They don't have a great running back either. Iowa always has a good defense. And again, they're 14th in defense this year. They play a USC offense here who has been very good through the air. And I think that's a question mark. Can USC throw the ball on Iowa? Iowa's 13th in opponent QBR allowed. So you've got a really good strength on strength there with USC's offense against Iowa's defense. I would say that I don't have a strong opinion on this game. So I'm curious to see your take too, but I would lean to the over if I was going to play this game in some way. I think that Iowa will score enough points here. Based on the fact that USC's defense has really been pretty disappointing. You know, it's surprising to me that USC gets as much talent as they do, and they're 77th in yards per play allowed. And let's be honest, USC didn't play a great schedule in the Pac-12. They played good teams in the non-conference. But the Pac-12, certainly there are some good offenses, but it's pretty surprising to me that they'd be 77th or 89th in yards per carry allowed. USC has given up a lot of big plays this year. Certainly disappointing if you're a team like USC to give up 185 plays of 10 yards or more, which is 95th best in the country. So Iowa, very good at limiting big plays. They're third in 10 yards per play, 10-yard plus plays allowed. And then also they've only given up 31 plays of 20 yards or more. USC's given up 45. So if I had to bet this game, I think I'd bet Iowa, but I think I like the over the best.
From a power rating standpoint, this is the wrong team favored for me. I have USC a 2-point favorite in this one, and I have yet to decide if I'm going to play this one, but it is one of my bigger overlays here. Everything you pointed out makes sense, and I do agree with your thoughts on the over. Now, the thing for me is this. Iowa's passing numbers look great. They also play in the Big Ten. They avoided Ohio State. The best quarterbacks they played were Brock Purdy, who threw for 270 yards on them. And Iowa State in that game had 7.7 yards per play. That game was delayed by lightning twice. Iowa State was -2 in turnover margin. They only had 54 plays. Iowa had the ball for 35 minutes in that game. So Iowa State moved the football very effectively. Purdy did as well. The other one was Jack Cohen, and they lost that game to Wisconsin 24-21. Cohen isn't a big play type of guy. He's more of like an efficient type of quarterback. This is a wholly different passing attack that Iowa's going to face here. You've got NFL caliber wide receivers. You've got an NFL caliber quarterback in Keaton Slovis. You've got Graham Harrell, who's a very good offensive coordinator. This is a different type of animal for Iowa. Now, the reason I haven't played it yet is because if Iowa runs the football well and uses that play action passing game well, they could have the ball for 40 minutes in this game, and it wouldn't surprise me at all. So USC could wind up with some limited possessions here in this one. But USC, Keaton Slovis has been phenomenal. He's thrown for over 4 bills multiple times. The wide receivers are good. So far, they're all going to play, I think, for the most part. That definitely helps them. This is a situation where, you know, Iowa's seeing something different. If they had played Ohio State and had played well defensively, maybe I'd feel a little bit different about it. They did play pretty well against Minnesota, but you know, weather was a kind of a factor in that game from what I recall. So I like USC here. I haven't played it yet. I probably will end up doing so, but Like I said, I am worried about Iowa having the ball for like 40 minutes and USC outgaining them by 100 yards, but just not having enough possessions.
I like you over the best here. I can understand where you're coming from. I don't trust Clay Helton very much to have his team ready to play in this one. Iowa hasn't been amazing in bowl games under Kirk Ferentz either, so you have that. But I think you make a good point about Iowa's defense hasn't played against teams that are really that good offensively. So we don't really know that their pass defense is great, even though they've played some pretty good teams. The teams who really don't like to throw it around. And I totally agree. Slovis is a tremendous quarterback. I think he is much better than anybody could have imagined. And he has very good wide receivers, obviously. I think USC was helped a lot by having in that new offensive coordinator in Harrell this year. So I like the over in this one.
All right, one more bowl game to hit on here, and then we'll talk some college basketball. And like I said, it was a very light week on the hardwood. Game 235-236 is the Cheez-It Bowl. I don't know if this is the best game to bet on, but man, is this game intriguing as hell. Washington State with the air raid, Air Force with the triple option, Air Force a 3-point favorite here in Phoenix, a total of 68.5 for this game. I don't even know where to begin with this one, truthfully.
Yeah, I kind of like Air Force here. So I'll start off by saying that this is one of the games that I'm considering playing. As I said, I try not to play bowl games too far ahead of time based on, you know, all the injuries, suspension things, but I like Air Force here. Mike Leach's teams have been consistently not ready for bowl games. You know, they're going to have to prove to me that they're ready. Maybe they do here. You know, in Gordon, they have another good quarterback for this system. I think Washington State can move the ball here, but can they ever stop Air Force? I mean, I don't have any confidence that Washington State's run defense can stop Air Force here. I know it helps that they have a longer time to prepare for this one. I wish I would have gotten 2.5. I know it's 3 across the board. I don't know if 2.5 will show up anymore. I do think that Washington State is one of those teams where they've played bad enough in several of their games this year and still just barely been able to win those games. I think it still said a decent amount about them that even though they have 6 wins, I think back to the Oregon State game. Oregon State had them beaten. I mean, they had them down and out. Washington State was very fortunate to win that game, or Washington State wouldn't even be in a bowl. I think Washington State in general was kind of a disappointing team this year. Air Force has been pretty solid. You know, they've been ready for bowl games pretty well under Calhoun. They're 7-5 ATS this year. I would think this would be a high-scoring game. However, you know, it kind of goes against my principles to take – over 67.5 or 68 with a triple option team as one of the teams. I mean, Air Force is likely to have a massive edge and time of possession here. If Air Force gets a lead, they are very good at bleeding clock. So, I mean, this is a high number. I can't take over that high of a number here. I like Air Force some in this one. If you look at Washington State defensively, 104th stopping the run. Washington State's 127th overall in yards per play allowed. So this defense, I mean, I know Mike Leach has even busted his defense time after time this year. They've allowed 72 plays of 20 yards or more. That's unbelievably bad. 33 plays of 30 yards or more given up. Air Force is pretty explosive on offense. They have 28 plays of 30 yards or more this year. They can get some big gainers on the ground. Air Force is a little bit better at passing this year than some people realize, too. I'm not saying that they're, you know, this juggernaut through the air, but they can at least keep you honest better than some of the other teams. They're not an army where they really can't throw the ball at all. Air Force decent through the air. I think they can do enough here. I would be really surprised to see Washington State have hardly any success on defense here. So I like Air Force.
Yeah, I mean, I mentioned this in my preview. You know, yeah, you get extra time to prep for the option, but how in the hell does Washington State prep for the option? I mean, I drew the comparison. It's like asking a truck driver to pilot a plane, you know, because you run an air raid, right? You recruit guys to throw the football. You're going to try and get your scout team to run an efficient option so you can prep for it. I'd be very surprised if they're able to have any success defensively here. By the way, Washington State, 126th in the country in yards per play allowed. The 4 teams below them, Houston, UConn, Bowling Green, and UMass. The teams right above them, UTEP, UL Monroe, and New Mexico. So I mean, this defense is as bad as it sounds, as bad as advertised. And like you said, I think Air Force will be prepared. The service academies almost always are. I don't know if Washington State will be. And obviously, Mike Leach, you know, very critical of his team at several junctures throughout the season. It has to be Air Force for me. It's right on my number pretty much. So it's not a power. Actually, it's my number is only half a point in this game. Air Force minus a half. But again, looking at the matchup, looking at the, you know, the extra prep time, all that, Air Force will be ready. Washington State probably won't be. Maybe it's just as simple of a handicap as that here to finish up the Friday slate of the bowl games. Like I said, on Thursday, when we get Brad Powers on the show, we'll talk about some more of these for Friday. Also the Saturday, Monday games. But I do want to get into the college basketball side of things here for our handicapping the hardwood segment. This will be shorter, obviously, seeing as how we went, you know, about 45 minutes on college football. And then also, there just aren't a whole lot of games this week, man. A very good Saturday slate, but up until that, not really a whole lot going on.
That's right. If you like college basketball, though, there's a lot more coming. Don't worry. You know, we'll talk plenty of games in coming weeks. And obviously, bowl season won't be around for too much longer. So basketball is going to be the main thing here that we talk about. But, you know, college basketball, I think now's a good time to kind of take a look at how things have gone overall and take a look at teams that you may be interested in fading in certain spots or backing in certain spots and kind of looking at, you know, what teams may be, you know, overvalued, especially if you look at their win-loss record. So I wanted to do a decent amount of that today because really we have that chance to do so because this week is so light.
Well, and it's really important too because conference play is coming up. And not that everyone's on equal footing in conference play. I mean, some teams are just vastly superior to others. But again, this is, you know, a similar talent level. These programs are kind of going after, you know, similar types of players, similarly rated players, stuff like that. So if you've played a bunch of Little Sisters of the Poor and Cupcakes, then all of a sudden you start playing conference games, maybe a little bit tough for you. On the flip side, if you've really gotten yourself battle-tested in the non-conference, that may help your case once we get to conference play as well. So we'll talk about some of those types of teams. We'll look at some statistical regression candidates here first. We'll start with the negative side. We'll finish with the positive side. You've got three teams that you're looking for some negative regression from here.
Yeah, Portland Pilots, I'm going to start out with. They're shooting 40.7% from three-point range. They shot 32.9% last year, and they have faced the 350th toughest slate of defenses. So it's 353 teams. So they've played just about the easiest slate of defenses. They were 308th last year in effective field goal percentage offense. They're 78th so far this year. This is going to go way down. So I think Portland, a team that either look to go against or you maybe like to take some unders with, because I think Portland's unlikely to be able to keep scoring the way they have so far this year. They have one guy on their team who is shooting over 50% so far this year from three. And last year he was 2 for 13, I believe. So this is a Portland team who I just don't believe in what they're doing right now on offense. I think that, you know, if their totals get high enough, you may find some value on unders. And even though they don't play in a great conference, they're going to be playing better teams than what they've played so far.
Something I think is kind of interesting here in looking at Portland's results under Terry Porter, 2017, they were 82nd in the country in three-point percentage at 37%. 2018, they were 39th at 38.3%. Then last year, they fell to 32.9%, 247th. And this year, as you mentioned, over 40%. So last year was an outlier, but that being said, still with the level of defenses that they've played so far this season, this is certainly not going to continue. And again, keep in mind that last year, this is a team that lost all 16 of its conference games. They already have more wins this year with 8 than they had all of last year. So this is definitely a team where the arrow is pointing down.
Yeah, and the other thing is the three-point line is a little bit farther back than it was last year. So I think percentages are going to be down a little bit overall. So the fact that theirs is higher by this much really stands out. On defense, I wanted to say something about George Washington. Their defense overall and specifically their three-point defense, Jamion Christian's teams have never finished in the top 100 at defending the three. George Washington is third and only giving up 24.0% so far from long range. They have faced the 301st toughest slate of offenses. They're going to play some pretty good three-point shooting teams in the A-10. This defense is going to get significantly worse. And you look at the A-10, some of the teams in that league can really shoot the basketball. Dayton, Davidson, and Richmond's a good shooting team. Teams like that are really going to shoot the ball well on them. I think you could find some value going against George Washington. in some of these A-10 games. And also, there could be some value on the over because Jamion Christian's team played so slow last year that everybody wants to play the under with them. George Washington is playing fairly slow this year, but they're not playing the Siena pace from last year where they were slower than Virginia. So that's another one to keep an eye on.
I really like this one for a couple of different reasons. One, as you mentioned, they played a very weak slate of offenses. Two, they are 342nd in the country in turnover percentage on defense. So they don't force turnovers. And when they get into conference play against some better offenses, that's really going to hurt them. And another thing here, I actually just noticed this over on Bart Torvik's website. And again, we talk about Torvik all the time. Tremendous resource. Right now, they have the lowest three-point rate against. Opponents are only shooting threes 23.4% of the time. So you've got regression coming defensively against the three, and more teams are going to start shooting three balls over them. So this is going to be a double whammy type of effect for George Washington, where they may get blown out in some games, and obviously you may want to look to play some overs again or some overs in their games as well as that three-point defense regresses.
Yeah, and the positive about taking some overs with them is you're going to be getting some 120s or low 130s for your totals. It's not going to be a high number, certainly.
All right, one other team to take a look at here that you've kind of keyed in on. This is more of a major conference team here. We do a lot of the under-the-radar stuff. We do cover a lot of the major conferences as well. As we take a look at a Pac-12 offense here that you're looking for some regression from.
Yeah, I took a look at this team because I've considered playing some unders with them here lately. I wish I would have played the under in their last game, but Oregon State's offense, 19th in effective field goal percentage offense so far this year. You know, they have really torched the Nets on some terrible defenses. They played the 323rd toughest schedule overall. They were outside the top 100 in effective field goal percentage offense last year. Look, Trace Tinkle is a really good player. Ethan Thompson is a solid player. But Oregon State doesn't have enough good players other than that. And even in the Pac-12, which I think the Pac-12 is a little bit better this year, still certainly not a great conference by any means. But you have to have more than two good players offensively to be 19th in effective field goal percentage offense. So I think Oregon State just does not have enough on offense to continue to be this good.
Well, this is also an Oregon State team here, and this is something that's important to take a look at, too. We don't have anything like this to mention on today's show, but maybe something we can talk about for next week. The Beavers have only played two true road games. They played at Texas A&M on Saturday, and that was that game you mentioned with the under. They also played at Wyoming, and we know Wyoming, one of the worst teams in college basketball this year. So that's something to keep in mind here, too. If you've got some of these offenses, they're playing really, really well. They've played home games and neutral site games. Now they start playing some of these true road contests. That's another reason to expect regression from them.
Absolutely. I think that Oregon State has a pretty good home court advantage. So you can use that to your advantage sometimes. But, you know, on the road, I think they will struggle. And like I said, I think the Pac-12 is a little bit better this year. And I think that, you know, there are several teams that they're going to play that have a lot more good players than what they do.
All right, so take a look at some positive regression candidates here, and we start with one in the Ivy that has played a very tough schedule here to this point.
Yeah, and I mean, you know, you won't find me talking about the Ivy League very much. It's kind of like a running joke that if there's one league that has really just been bad for me to bet, it's been the Ivy League. But I do think that Penn is much better defensively than what they look here. If you look at Penn, they've played the 14th toughest slate of offenses so far this year. They've been top 100 in defensive efficiency the last 2 years. They're 151st now. You know, to me, this is a Penn defense that's going to look pretty good in the Ivy League. You know, there's a lot of bad teams in the Ivy League. You get down there and you play against Cornell, Columbia, Brown, teams like that. I think their defense is going to look much better than what it has so far this year. I think Penn will probably be a pretty good team ATS in the Ivy League as well, partially because, you know, they've really been battle-tested so far this year. And if you look at their games against top opponents, they haven't really played that bad. You know, they lost by 10 to Arizona. They lost by 11 to Villanova. And that was a game that I remember, you know, they were down by a couple points there with just a few minutes left in the game. It was a very competitive game. Now, it's fair to say, I don't know how Penn lost by 19 points to Rice and by 11 to Lafayette. And then obviously turns around and beats Providence on the road, beats UCF on a neutral. They also beat Alabama on the road. So Penn has been a bit up and down, certainly. There's no doubt about that. I think their defense is better than it looks so far this year. Wouldn't be afraid to take some unders with them. And based on the fact that they don't have a great win-loss record, I think teams are likely to, or people are likely to underrate them a little bit when they're playing against those worst teams in the Ivy League, where Penn is willing to run and they're good on offense. So they could run up a pretty good score on those teams.
Yeah, Penn was down by 4 with 2:54 left in that game against Villanova and then just couldn't make anything down the stretch, and free throws kind of put that one away. But yeah, they are a very consistent team there in the Ivy. Probably a good look to win the Ivy once we start to get some conference tournament futures and all that. One other team here as we go down to the Sun Belt, UT Arlington, another one that you're looking for some positive aggression from.
Yeah, I like UT Arlington. I think this team's a lot better than most people think. They're 4-9 so far this year overall. They've played the 11th toughest schedule. Anybody who knows the Sun Belt knows that, number one, I like talking about the Sun Belt. We love talking about the Sun Belt on here. The Sun Belt is going to be much weaker teams than they have played for most of the season so far. I mean, they've played Gonzaga, Oregon, even Furman. Houston's a very good team. So they've been on the road a lot. They're still on the road for a decent amount of years. They got 5 road games in a row. So certainly an interesting scheduling spot here for UT Arlington. They have a decent amount of time off before their next game, which is on January 2nd. But I think that as you look at them, their defense is far better than it looks so far this year. This is a UT Arlington defense that was 47th last year in effective field goal percentage defense. They're 145th so far this year. I'd look to take some unders with UT Arlington in the Sun Belt, because the Sun Belt is a conference where you don't find too many teams who are really good at defense. UT Arlington's good at defense. They were last year. I don't see any reason to expect them to not be this year. They were second best in defensive efficiency in the league last year. They also slow the game down much more than most teams in the Sun Belt do. So they played a little bit faster so far this year, but I think that they want to slow the game down. I think you'll get some pretty high totals to where you might be able to play, you know, under 145, under 146 or something like that in some of their games coming up. I think that could be a good look.
Well, and this is a really good segue into what we're going to talk about next here, where UT Arlington 4-9 as they open up conference play on January 2nd. And you're going to get some of these where teams just have ugly records as they start getting into conference play, but it's because of who they played. It's not an indictment on them. It's just because of the schedules that they played. So don't just assume as these teams go into conference play that have really good or really bad records that it says something about who they are. You've got to look at who they've played, and then also compare it to what they're going to play going forward.
Absolutely. There's some of these teams that have really poor records that are pretty good teams, and we're going to find that out pretty soon. And then there's other teams that, you know, the narrative around them is, you know, look at them. They're 10-1 this year so far. Well, who have they beaten? You know, so we'll talk about these teams a little bit now. The teams that I wanted to say weak schedule teams with kind of phony records, I guess you could say this is a negative way of looking at it. Maybe it's because I've had a bad run here lately in college basketball. I just kind of want to talk about the negative. But in general, it's you know, it's been a really strong sport for me in the long run, and I assume things will turn around. As I said to Adam here before we were recording, done fine in the other sports, but college basketball has hurt me here for the last few weeks, certainly. Stanford is 11-1 so far this year. They're 9-3 ATS, so everybody's going to think, wow, they're a covering machine, a really good team. They played the 337th toughest schedule out of 353. Too many turnovers for this team. You know, it's hard to keep winning at this kind of clip against good teams with that many turnovers. I don't think Stanford is nearly as good as some people think they are. And like I said, I think the Pac-12 is a little bit better than they've been in the past. I think they may be a good team to look to go against ATS here pretty soon.
Maybe that chance comes on Sunday, because I thought this was really interesting. I wrote about this game in my situational article. Kansas making the trip out to Palo Alto off of that loss against Villanova. That's a long trip for Kansas, but I mean, they're going to be plenty focused now for that one.
Yeah, I would lean Kansas in this one, though. You know, obviously be laying a decent amount of points in that one. So I don't know if that's going to be the very best spot, because Kansas making a long trip after off a heartbreaking loss, you know, they'd probably be happy to just win the game. I don't know how much by a margin they'll win there, but my lean would be Kansas, certainly.
All right, another team that's played a really weak schedule with a phony record, the Duquesne Dukes. I know we've talked about them before as a team that has a really good home court advantage. I guess that's kind of played into this a little bit too.
Yeah, Duquesne, they've done this pretty consistently, scheduling a really weak non-conference. And, you know, once they get in the A-10, they usually struggle. We've seen that year after year that Duquesne is non-conference wise, putting up about the weakest schedule you can get so far this year. I do think this team has improved. They're 10-1. I think this team has got some decent performances under their belt, but yesterday's loss to UAB on a neutral, certainly a worrisome sign. You know, they're going to be playing teams that are quite a bit better than UAB here pretty soon. I think the A-10 is pretty solid. I do like the A-10. They're going to be playing St. Louis and Davidson here in the next couple weeks. And then Rhode Island's a decent team. Dayton's a very good team. So I think that Duquesne is likely to have a difficult time in the A-10.
One more team here that's played a weak schedule that you think has a pretty phony record. We go out west here to talk about Pacific and what's going on with them.
Pacific's 12-3. They've played the 351st ranked schedule. They have a lot of close wins. I would expect Pacific's schedule to turn things around here quite a bit for their record. I mean, if you start looking at who they're playing coming up, it's certainly going to be better than who they've played thus far. Pacific plays a lot of those low scoring close games. I don't think they have a good enough offense to beat good teams. So we'll see about that one, but I think Pacific has slowed the game down. They're not really that great at defense. So when they play teams like a BYU or somebody like that, they're not going to be good enough to keep the other team from scoring a decent amount. I don't think Pacific can keep up in games like that.
One other thing I want to ask you about from a schedule standpoint, because I was kind of going through looking for some games to find for the situational article. Iona has only played 6 games. They played November 9th, 13th, 22nd, 23rd, then December 4th, December 17th, and then their next game, December 29th, where they'll play Colorado on the road in altitude there in Boulder. What's up with this schedule for the Gales in that they played 6 games with a bunch of long layoffs?
Yeah, it's strange. I'm not really sure. There's a couple other MAAC teams that have not played very many games, so it might be something to do with the MAAC. They do have a lot of games kind of packed close together in conference play. So that'll be one where when you're looking for scheduling spots, I think there'll be quite a few of them in that conference. I do think that, you know, if you look at Iona, going to play Colorado on the 29th is definitely a questionable spot. I mean, they haven't played in so long. They haven't really played a good schedule either. They played the 302nd toughest schedule. So they haven't been tested that well in their games against better opponents. They haven't played that well either. Princeton's a team that's down quite a bit so far this year. They lost pretty badly to Connecticut. Iona's certainly not used to playing at elevation. So I would think that that'd be a good spot to look to go against them, or certainly I'd be worried about backing them. But yeah, it's interesting to see a team that's only played 6 games when there's several others that have played 11 or 12.
All right, so we finish up the Handicapping the Hardwood segment for this week here with a fade and a follow. And again, not a lot of games throughout the week here. You got to start looking ahead to Saturday and Sunday and then on into conference play for these. But who are the two teams on your radar here for a fade and follow?
So fade is Butler. The Bulldogs, I like this team. It's not that I think Butler's a bad team, but they're 9-3 ATS. And the thing about them is they play at such a slow pace. They're going to be laying some points here based on how good they've been ATS. I don't like this team laying many points. They're going to play a lot of really close games. You know, Butler, I like much better as, you know, a small underdog or a very small favorite than I would to lay 7 or 8 points or more with them, because I think they're going to play so many close games. And then look at the Big East. The Big East is really good. I mean, I know it's not the same Big East from several years ago, but the Big East has some really high quality teams. And I think we're going to be talking about that league this year as really having some quality basketball going on.
All right. And then what are we looking at for a follow team here?
I think I like this one even more. Number one, because it's way under the radar. And you know, I love that. But Bucknell. Bucknell's played a really tough schedule so far this year, 94th. They're 3-9 ATS, 94th strength of schedule. They're 3-9 ATS. They have a good coach in Nathan Davis. This Bucknell team is good every year. I know they lost quite a bit from last year. This is still a team that's more talented than almost anybody else in the Patriot League, probably outside of Colgate. So Bucknell is going to be a good team. I think this is a good team to look to back in Patriot League play. At the beginning of Patriot League action, this team is not going to be valued as highly as they should be. this is a team that I think, you know, of the two, I do like fading Butler some here, but I like the follow of Bucknell even more.
Kyle Hunter, professional handicapper over at huntersportspicks.com. Also some free bowl coverage over at bettersportspicks.com. Tell us about what's going on at the two sites here, man.
Yeah, I mean, I'm going to lower prices here at huntersportspicks.com this week, partially as kind of a Christmas holiday special, partially just because I've done poorly here lately in college basketball. And anybody who knows me well enough knows that, you know, I really take it personally. I don't want to lose for other people. You know, I can kind of handle it for myself, but I hate losing for other people. And I'm going to try to give some specials here this week at huntersportspicks.com, lower some of the prices for upcoming season, and even lower the bowl season price since obviously some of the games have been played. So look for that. And then at bettersportspicks.com, I'm going to be giving some free bowl analysis. I've already put up several articles there. I'm going to be giving some free leans, plays that almost made the cut but didn't quite. At bettersportspicks.com. The other thing I'm doing is doing some free contests over there. Did a couple contests this past weekend. Certainly don't promise that you're going to get rich or anything like that from playing them, but there's not too many people doing it, and it takes 2 seconds to guess how many points are going to be scored in a certain day. So, you know, I'm giving away like $25 for person that gets closest to the score and a certain day of bowl plays, NFL, things like that. So it's just fun and could add a little bit of money to your bankroll. And as far as the content, you know, bettersportspicks.com, I'll be putting up a lot of free stuff. So go over there and sign up for the free members area if you haven't yet.
Kyle Hunter, professional handicapper over at huntersportspicks.com and bettersportspicks.com at Kyle Hunter Picks on Twitter. Appreciate the time as always, man. Thank you so much for joining me. Once again, Merry Christmas to you and yours, and we'll talk to you again next week.
Thanks so much, man. Merry Christmas to everyone.
There you go. There's Kyle Hunter again, professional handicapper over at huntersportspicks.com and bettersportspicks.com. No show Tuesday, no show Wednesday. We'll be back on the air on Thursday with Brad Powers from bradpowersports.com talking about these bowl games and week 17 of the NFL. That'll do it for me. Thank you so much for listening, everybody. Happy holidays to you and yours, and I will talk to you again on Thursday.